We shall start with a prayer from the Shvetashvatara Upanishad. There the sage, illumined sage, sees the divine presence in all beings, in the whole creation. This is his revelation. Om Tvam Stri Tvam Pumanasi Tvam Kumara Utava Kumari Tvam Jirno Dandena Vanchasi Tvam Jato Bhavasi Vishvato Mukha Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. O Divine Lord, Thou art woman, Thou art man, Thou art youth, Thou art maiden, Thou art the old man tottering on his staff, Thou dost appear born in manifold forms. Om peace, may there be peace in our hearts, may there be peace and harmony amongst all beings. May there be peace everywhere in nature. Good morning. Today we shall conclude this topic, Seeing God in All, which we have been studying for the last 5-6 weeks sessions. It's just a summary of, mostly summary of what has been said before from various sources. This study was covered in 6 parts. The first part was, according to the Upanishads, Bhagavad Gita and other scriptures, this whole creation is nothing but He alone. There is only one Supreme Being, known by different names in different forms, but that alone appears also as the creation. That is the starting theme. Then a second part was why we are not able to see the divine presence if it is everything, if it is in everything, and if it is everything, why we should not be able to see. What prevents us from seeing the divine presence in us and in other beings? Then the third part was, what is needed to be done for us to see God, first in ourselves and then in other beings, human beings and non-human beings, in the whole of nature. The third part has many different subdivisions. So we shall start at the beginning. The beginning position of Vedanta, of our study, is God is. If you have a question about that, then we have to discuss that. Come to that firm conclusion that there is God. God, or by whatever name, self, Atman, whatever you want to call, there is something beyond the visible. We should arrive at that conclusion with some degree of conviction. Then only we can start looking for that, searching for that experience. So that decision has to be arrived at. We studied different pramanas or evidence available for us to come to that conclusion that there is God. First pramana is the scriptures, mainly Upanishads, Bhagavad Gita and other scriptures of other faiths. too. But that has to be seen in practice. Is there somebody, has there been somebody who has actually had that experience? Then it gives us a little bit more conviction for us to start our own search. Many sages have experienced this truth in their lives, based on their experience, not based on mere study of books, but based on their experience, they have said that there is God and they have experienced it, seen it, and they have said, we all can do that one. So the testimony of the sages, separated by centuries and continents, that's a powerful source of evidence that strengthens our conviction. We can come to the conclusion that there is God, and then we have to try to see, experience God's presence in us in everything, as the scriptures say that we can do. So these are two powerful sources. There are other sources. There are six pramanas, which we need not worry about at this time. We did that in the past. But these two are enough. Scriptures and the words of those great saints in whose experience, whose words we have complete faith. Separated by centuries and continents, they have all come to the same conclusion independently, based on their experience. As Swamiji last night, Girishanji explained how Sri Ramakrishna came to that conclusion based on his experience, not based upon scholarly study of scriptures. So like that, we have powerful evidence, and that should give us enough motivation to start our own search. There are some very famous sentences, passages in the Upanishads. Many there are, but we need only study a couple of things for us to remember. Our main source of information for Vedanta study are the Upanishads. As we saw before, there are three pillars of Vedantic knowledge. The three pillars for foundation, corners of the three of the Vedantic, with all Vedantic information, are called the Prasthana Trayam. Prasthanam means departure, going from where we are to some other place. So where we are is looking at the world, names and forms, good and bad, pain and pleasure, all these we are experiencing, this what we are familiar with. But scripture says, and the sages are saying, this is not all there is to the existence. There is an ultimate reality, there is a supreme being, which is the foundation, and which is itself appearing, is being seen, misperceived as the universe of names and forms and good and bad. And our goal in life is to see that one. So that information we gather from the Upanishads. That's one pillar of Vedantic information, Upanishads, scriptures, mainly Upanishads. Other scriptures we don't, there are many, too many, but we depend only on the Upanishads, because they contain the revelations of the sages. The second source of information is the Bhagavad Gita for us. There are similar other scriptures. The Bhagavad Gita is a distillation of the contents of the Upanishads, simplified and presented in a simpler language in one place. That is the second source of information. Those are the two that we depend upon, the Upanishads and the Bhagavad Gita, and the words of the various sages who are speaking from their experience. Then there is another source called the Prasthana, the third one of the Prasthana Trayam, of the three pillars. They are the aphorisms, Vedanta aphorisms of Vyasa, Badarayana. Those are scholarly presentations of the conclusion of the Upanishads subject to severe logic, tests of logic, refuting all other opposing schools. We don't study that Brahma Sutra, Vedanta aphorisms, not necessary. For scholarly study, it is necessary, but for seekers who are interested in gaining the experience, divine experience, not so much in scholarly pursuit of scriptures, we don't study Brahma Sutras, Vedanta aphorisms. So one of the most famous sentences in the Chandogya Upanishad, where it says, all this is verily Brahman. This means this whole visible universe, whole cosmos. This, the word is, pronoun this is used in Vedanta. Idam, or this means this whole visible universe. This whole universe, idam sarvam, this whole universe, Brahma eva, Brahma khalu, Brahman alone. Then why are we not seeing Brahman, as pure consciousness? Why are we seeing all these names and forms? There is no one answer, convincing answer to that question, why? Whenever we have the question, why something, then we don't have clear answer. Not only in Vedanta, in any field of human endeavor, why something is like that? We can give approximate reason. Why that is like that? Then we give another approximate reason. Why that is like that? Then after two or three answers, approximate answers, we hit a stone wall. It is like that. If you ask why there is gravity, then we can explain why two things attract each other with a certain force directly proportional to the product of their masses, inversely to the square of the distance. All those, it can be, explanation can be given. But why they should attract at all in the first place, why they just can't stay in their own place where they are? If you throw a stone, why should it come down? Why can it not stay there? Then there is no answer. It is like that. So, why we are misperceiving this supreme reality, which is pure consciousness, as all these names and forms and good and bad, lot of variety, pain and pleasure everywhere, suffering everywhere. The only explanation, it is misperception, it is maya. The solution is not in seeking the answer to why, the solution is finding a way to see the truth as it is, clearing the misperception. This is the analogous to this famous analogy, which is actually overdone, if you ask me. A person is seeing a snake and is asking so many questions. Why this snake is here? Why it is causing fear? Is it poisonous or not poisonous? Why there are yellow stripes and black dots? All this, the way is it, does it drink only milk or does it drink water also? If you ask all these questions about snake, what answer can be given? You can give some answer. Snake is like that. Sometimes it is poisonous. Why it is like that? If you ask more, then there is no answer. It is like that. Then the sages come and say, you're asking all these questions about snake. What snake is it that you're seeing? The snake is here, I'm seeing. To the person who says it is real, he does not know there's no snake, but I'm seeing it, so it is real to me. They cannot deny that. This perceived snake is causing the same fear and problems as a real snake would. There's no real snake for me, as far as I am concerned. The jnani, the teacher, comes and says, open your eyes and clear your vision. Put on some glasses, you have to get proper 20/20 vision, and throw some light on it. What snake are you talking about? Oh, revelation, illumination. There is no snake. I thought it was a snake. It was so real. What is it? It's only a rope. It's lying there. This whole universe we are seeing now, which is so real, can't question the reality of this universe. I can't question the reality of my pain and pleasure, of other people's suffering. It's there, so real. But the sages are saying, if you clear our perception, if you purify the mind, which is our instrument of perception, make it free from all the dirt we have accumulated over a long period of time, then we can, what is being seen as the world of good and bad, name and form, suffering and pain, appears as nothing other than pure consciousness, Ananda, ultimate reality. That's what it's always been. Even now it is the truth. Just like dream. When dream is happening, it is so real. We don't know we are dreaming in dream. You are asking so many questions. Why good is happening in the dream? Somebody, robber comes and chases me, or snake comes, or tiger comes, or some wedding party happens, everybody is dancing. It's all real, and we participate in it. We cry and laugh in dream, not knowing that it is only a dream. And you have so many questions, why there is suffering like that, why somebody is doing bad like that in dream, you are asking. But what answer can be given? A waking person who is awakened, illumined person comes and says, shakes and says, hey, open your eyes, you are dreaming. Open your eyes and where is the rubber, where is the tiger, where is the wedding party? Then open my eyes, oh, this is my bedroom. There was nobody came, nobody went, no tiger, no rubber, no pain, no pleasure. I've always been here. I was always the same person. Nobody came, nobody went. Nothing good happened, nothing bad happened. No suffering, no pain. I saw all of that. That is called illumination or realization. We realize that all along we have been seeing only Brahman, only reality, only God, but you are simply misperceiving. And that once the misperception is cleared, then total relief comes, no pain, no pleasure. That is divine experience. That is the goal of life. So all this is summarized in one short sentence. There are four such short sentences in the Upanishads called Mahavakyas. This is not one of them. Sarvam Kalavidam Brahma. Tattvamasi, Chandogya Upanishad, that thou art. It's telling us who I really am. I am thinking I am this person. I had so many names before. My father, my mother called me by some other name. In school I was known by some other name. Now I am known by Brahmarupananda Swami. I refer to myself, I am this, referring to the body, this body, the old body, now getting old. And then with all the old age problems, this is what I am. Open your eyes and see, you are not, you are that. Tattvamasi, that thou art. What is that? That's supreme reality. You are now, we are all that. We are having the misperception that I am this body, good and bad, pain and suffering, my children, my grandchildren, my family, my job, my work, my money. This is all misperception. That's what Vedantic message is. The goal is to clear this misperception, see the truth as it is, and realize means experience, not theoretically by reading books. I can read books and say, I am God, I am Brahman, but that doesn't mean anything. Not, that is not true knowledge. Book knowledge is not true knowledge. Experience is knowledge. Each one of us has to experience for ourselves. Not satisfied by some other sage's experience that I have always been that, that I am that. Aham Brahmasmi. That is the goal of Vedantic study. So sages are saying, yes, God is. How do we know? We have seen that. Not based on book study, scripture study, but they said, I have seen that. This is what Sri Ramakrishna said. When Narendra famously asked him, have you seen God? He had asked that question of many other people before as a college student, but no one had given a satisfactory answer. No one had said yes. They had all gave lectures about God. It's easy to give talk about God on Sunday service lectures like that. But have you seen God? That was Narendra's question. He said yes. For the first time and probably for the only time in Narendra's life, he got this answer from somebody who could say, looking at his eye, yes, I have seen God. God is more real than the world is. I am seeing God more vividly than I am seeing you, and you too can see. And made it possible for Narendra to see. That is the Vedantic message. So we We look to the words of the sages who are speaking from experience, and that is the powerful motivation for us to start our quest. God is in everything. God is this whole creation. All hands are God's hands. All feet are God's feet. All eyes are God's eyes. All mouths are God's mouths. He alone resides in all the beings. Whomever we see, whatever we see, we are seeing him in disguise. He is wearing a costume. Male costume, female costume, Swami costume, householder costume, child costume, adult costume, old man costume, all this. And although not only be human beings, animals and plants and whole of nature, earth, sun, God, moon, everything is he alone. And these are all the infinite number of costumes he is wearing. You should not be carried away by the costume, as in a Halloween party. Who is wearing the costume? Who is behind the costume? That's what we should see. So when we see somebody, Bhagavad Gita asks, Sri Krishna asks us to do, see the divine presence in that. Sri Ramakrishna said that. When you see somebody, don't be carried away by the personality. American or Indian, rich or poor, educated or uneducated, or driving what car, eating what food, speaking what language, those are not the essential thing. Those are the outermost clear coverings of our personality. Behind all of this, inside all of this, only one reality residing in all, and that is he. This we read in the Upanishads, in the Gita, many, many places. We have seen those passages. Swami Vivekananda quoted this famous verse in the Bhagavad Gita in one of his lectures, chapter 13, verse 27. There Swamiji says, Sri Krishna says in the Gita, Samam Sarveshu Bhuteshu Tishtantam Parameshwaram. In all the beings, Sarveshu Bhuteshu, not limited to human beings, including inanimate objects, ocean, river, mountains, this planet, Mars, other planets, other solar systems, other stars, moon, everything, in all the beings, Samam Tishtantam Parameshwaram. The Supreme Lord is present alike, in the same way. Vinashyatsu Avinashyantam. All these bodies and minds and things, including sun, star, moon, galaxies, all these things are Vinashi. They are perishable. They come and go. They have a limited time lifespan. Some long, some short. Some small creatures only live for a very short time. We live for 70, 80, 90 years, human beings. Some animals live longer. And the earth lives for 12 billion years. Sun lives for another 15 billion years. And then everything perishes. And then even galaxies also disintegrate. They live for trillions and trillions of years, and then everything disappears. Everything has a beginning, everything has an end, everything deteriorates in time. So in these perishable contents, bodies and minds, he, the imperishable Avinashi, he is present. The content is he is imperishable, eternal, infinite, formless, attributeless, ultimate reality, pure consciousness. All these are merely costumes that the same being is wearing. So we disregard the costume and see the divine presence in all. That is our challenge, that is our task in front of us. When you see somebody, what am I seeing? This good person, this bad person, this pleasant person, this rich person, that's not what you are seeing. You are seeing him. The mind says, oh, this is good, this is bad. No. That's not true perception. It's misperception. We should develop the incisive perception like a laser beam that enables us to pierce through the shell of personality and see the divine presence in all. That is the goal of human life. So sages have said that is the goal of human life. Unless we accomplish that, whatever else we accomplish is not enough. The purpose of human life is to reach that goal of seeing divine presence in all, including oneself and others. Until that goal is reached, whatever else we have done, You have not done the one required thing. So like this, we studied the divine presence in all. God can be seen. The next question was, why are we not seeing God? There are three things that come to my mind. Why we are not seeing God? If He's present everywhere in all, unconditionally, as the scriptures say, why are we not seeing God? One reason is, God is not a material object outside of us. If it is a material object outside of me, I can see with my eyes. If it is too small, I can use a powerful electron microscope, which magnifies a million times. Very small objects. If it's too big, and we can see the instrument. If it's too far away, then we can see. Using the powerful telescopes, the Hubble telescope, they're sending pictures of distant galaxies, which you can see on your computer screen. They are thousands, hundreds of thousands of light years away. That's what we can see with powerful instruments. But it is not an object. It is the very divine core within us, our personality, the center of our personality, whose presence makes it possible to see everything else. Beyond the mind. The mind has the ability to see things, think, conceive of things, think of things. Sense organs have ability to see things and perceive things. But these all function only because of the divine presence. That's the source. So we cannot go beyond the mind and see what is behind the mind. The mind is limited. The sense organs are limited. My eyes can see everything in front of me, good or bad, distant or near, big or small, I can see with my eyes, sometimes with some help. But how can I see my own eyes? Can I see my own eyes? If I want to know whether I have very nice blue eyes or green eyes or plain brown eyes, I cannot see it. But I can see the reflection in the mirror. What I am seeing is a reflection. I can't see my own eyes. Mind is a little bit more powerful. Mind can see everything outside. Mind can examine itself. More powerful than the physical eyes, other sense organs. Mind has the ability to examine its own contents. That's what we do in meditation. But beyond it, it cannot go. There it stops. So this Atman present within us, in all of us, cannot be seen the way we see ordinary things with mind and sense organs. Upanishad says how it can be done. Upanishad says, Kathopanishad, Yama says to Nachiketa, Yesha sarvesha bhuteshu gudaha na prakashati. This Atman is present in all the beings, but it is hidden gudaha from view. Na prakashati, does not come out and publicize it, say, I am Atman, look at me, it doesn't say. Mind seeks that publicity. Mind says, look at me, I am special, I am different. Somebody wearing some purple hair or some Swami dress, oh, look, drawing attention, look at me, I am special, I am different. Mind does that one. Seeks publicity, attention. Makes a statement, look at me, I am different. Some kind of t-shirt wearing some provocative logo or something. Not that. Atman remains hidden. Hidden from you. Yesha Atma Sarveshu Bhuteshu Gudaha Na Prakashate. Then how can we say if it always remains hidden from you? Rishi says, Sage says, Drishyate, yes, it can be seen. How? Agriya Buddhya Sukshmaya Buddhya. Two things have to be done. Buddhi means the instrument of perception, our mind, with which we see everything. That mind has to be made sharp, incisive, and it should be able to see subtle things hidden behind the gross appearance. That ability we don't have right now. We are carried away by a big appearance. Oh, how she looks, how he looks. Attractive or not attractive, that's what we are seeing. But if we have the incisive power, perception, like a laser beam, to penetrate the misleading shallow personality, Then we will be able to see divine presence in all. That is our task. It can be seen. It's not an impossible task. Though it appears impossible. In Kena Upanishad, a group of students approach an illumined teacher, not an ordinary person who speaks from book knowledge, one who has the experience of divine presence. And the group asks the teacher, "Sir, please tell us what is Brahman, what is ultimate reality that the books speak about." That person is an illumined person. We have seen, experienced divine presence. But he says, "I cannot tell you in words. This is experience so profound, so deep, that you have to know it by your own experience, but there are no words to explain." How can you explain even ordinary day-to-day experiences? Not possible. The joy that you get by holding close to your heart the grandchild which sits in your lap, very cute child, plays and utters sweet things in your ear, hugging you, that joy cannot be communicated in words. How can other people know they have to have the same thing experience? Our experiences cannot be communicated in words. Sri Ramakrishna explains this in the parable. In a family, there was a girl who was recently married. Those days, marriage was only a kind of ceremony, but the husband and wife would live in their own parents' homes until they were old enough to live as husband and wife at that stage. And there was a younger sister of that married girl, 6-year-old girl. This married girl is only 14, 15 years old. Marriage used to happen at that age. Then periodically that son-in-law would come and visit the father-in-law's wife's place. 2-3 days he would stay, go back. He was going to school, she was working at home. Whenever that son-in-law came, there was so much joy in the atmosphere, home. Everybody would be happy, especially that married girl. There was a spring in their feet, there was a lilt in their voice, and the glow on their face. Their eyes were glowing. The girl, young girl noticed that one. Whenever that man comes, my sister will become so happy, joyful. Then she asked him, "Sister, whenever he comes, how come you are so happy? When he goes away, you feel so sad." And this married girl, how can she explain to that 6-year-old younger sister the joy of married life? She cannot. She can only say, "You are too young to know that one. You grow up and then you will know. When you get married, you will know." So things like this, experiences have to be known only by one's own experience. Other people who had the experience cannot explain in words. Sri Ramakrishna used to go into Samadhi every now and then. Then when people asked him, "Thakur, what happens when you go into Samadhi?" he would not be able to say. He would hold his hand like this on his throat and say, "No, I cannot say. Divine Mother is holding me, preventing me." Cannot be put in words. So, anubhaveka vedyam. You have to know, each one of us has to know the experience of divine presence. Ourselves, you cannot remain satisfied by listening to somebody else's experience. That is the message of the Upanishads. Then that is the reason, too subtle to be seen by the eyes and sense organs. One reason why we are not able to see divine presence in us and other people. Then the second reason is, we are way too much preoccupied with all other activities, preoccupations, and spend too little, if any, time on any serious attempt to see God. So many distractions, worldly things, occupying our attention, demanding our attention. Hardly do we spend any time in serious effort to see God. We do, but not enough. It requires more effort than we are doing right now. Too many distractions in our lives. And we keep on increasing the distractions by adding things to our life. Those distractions are described in the scriptures, but we don't have to read scriptures to know the distractions we are having. We know it, our own experience. Shankaracharya says, there are 3 great distractions in Viveka Chudamani. Some of you are studying it with Swamiji Wednesday nights. Shankara said there are three great distractions which prevent us from seeing divine presence in us. What are they? First is lokanuvartanam. So many worldly things happening in this world. News coming at us from every side. Earlier news was only through newspapers. Now news comes in so many media. Every second something is coming in your cell phone, some Twitter, some text message, something is coming. Internet and everything, computer, TV, everything. So much news in the world. What is happening where, everywhere, who is doing what. And also local news. Whenever there is any state dinner or Oscar presentation, next day newspapers are full of who is wearing with what. Who was whose escort. What dress Mrs. Obama was wearing. American made in some other country. All this list of guests in a list in the whole newspaper. So much news. Celebrity trivia, sports trivia, politics trivia. People can tell in one all-star game how many points one basketball player made, how many assists, how many other things, how many yards one football player rushed, how many touchdowns. We know all these statistics. What jeopardy game, something talk show is there. But what is happening in our minds, we don't pay attention to that. This is worldly distraction. So many things. Lokanuvartanam. Lot of time is spent in this. Second one is Dehanuvartanam. The second thing that occupies our time and attention, energy, is preoccupation with the body and its needs and concerns. What food to eat, what dress to wear, what car to drive, what movie to see, which restaurant to go this weekend, what food. So much preoccupation with all these things. Lot of time and energy resources are spent. Then third thing, if there is any time left after these two, is Shastranuvartanam, Shankara says. Sometimes some people spend too much time and energy on scholarly study of scriptures. Write articles and books and lectures and travel. All at the world level, as Narada did. Narada Maharshi was the greatest scholar among all scholars who ever lived in this universe. And he has studied everything from astronomy to zoology with no exception. And entire peace of mind. So scholarly study of scriptures does not give us knowledge of the self. It only gives us pride, sense of accomplishment. I know all these things. I can quote all the commentaries back and forth. All that kind of pride will come, but it will not bring realization. Shankara says the futility of scholarly knowledge, if we spend too much time on that, explains in Viveka Chudamani in a verse, in a very telling manner. He says, Vagvai Khari Shabda Jari Shastra Vyakhyana Kaushalam Vaidushyam Vidisham Tadvad Bhuktaye Natu Muktaye. Vagvai Khari means just impressive knowledge, flow of words, torrential flow of words, Shabda Jari, torrential flow of words. Very impressive language. Shastra Vyakhyana Kaushalam, great proficiency in explaining commentaries of the scriptures. This kind of scholarship, Vidisham of scholars, Vaidushyam Vidisham, what does it serve? Of what good is it? He says, Bhuktaye, it gives worldly rewards. Fame will come, 60 minutes will interview you as the greatest scholar, rewards will come, you'll be invited to White House and some medal will be given. All those things will, and money will come, natu muktaye, but no liberation will come. Pride will come instead. And time goes away. We have limited time, and much time is spent in study of scriptures. These are all distractions. That's why we are not able to see God's presence. And the third reason why we are not able to see God in us or anywhere is lack of intense yearning. We have desire, but it's not intense enough. We have to intensify our desire. So after doing all these things, then the next question we have to ask ourselves is, what can I do now? Today, this moment, what can I do to see God? Tell me something that I can do. We don't want theory and all those things. Something tangible that I can do, everybody can do, should be possible for us. Tell me something that I can do. Give me a few things that I can do. That is the next question. So I came up with a list of 10 things that we can do. We don't have, we have all gone through all of those in the previous weeks, but we can just remind ourselves what all the things we can do, each one of us. Not all the 10, there may be more. 2, 3, if we can take whatever suits us, whatever we can do, depending on our ability, resources, and inclination, but that's enough. We take the first step, then next step will open itself. We take the next step, then third step will open itself. But if I don't take the first step, then we'll stay where we are. So first few things that we can do, we can choose among these 10 things. One thing essential to see God, that gain that experience, is God's grace. Sri Ramakrishna and other sages have said, without God's grace, nothing can happen. If we want to see Him, we have to pray to Him to reveal Himself to us. It is He who has to reveal Himself to us. By our own effort, we cannot do much. We have to do our effort, but not efficient, not sufficient. We have to seek His grace. Sri Ramakrishna says, you may try thousands of times, but nothing can be achieved without God's grace. One cannot see God without His grace. Then he gives an example. The petrol man has to turn the lamp onto his own face if he wants others to see him. At night, there used to be a foot petrol man. Now petrol cars are there those days, earlier days. Foot petrol man used to go holding a lantern in his hand. With the help of that lantern, he could see if anybody is doing something wrong, robbers or something, he could see. But if you want to see the policeman himself, you have to pray to him, sir, please show the light on your own face so we can see your face. Otherwise, we cannot see him. He has to reveal him to us, his presence to us. So we pray that one. Swami Tuyananda said, there is no doubt that one should practice japa and meditation, but there is no guarantee that by doing so, one will attain God. His grace is the only means to realize him and nothing else. How to seek his grace? Any kind of prayer, spiritual practice, chanting God's name, singing His glories, any of these things that we can do are all our prayer to Him to reveal Himself, earnest prayer to reveal Himself, yourself to us, that we have to do. Seeking God's grace. Then second thing is to intensify our yearning. We have desire to see God, but it has to be very intense. Sri Ramakrishna says, how intense it should be. A couple of passages I will read. Intensify our yearning to see God. Cry to the Lord with an intensely yearning heart, and you will certainly see Him. People shed a whole jug of tears for wife or husband and children. They swim in tears for money, but who weeps for God? Cry to Him with a real cry. God can be attained by crying to Him with a longing heart. To Pandit Shashadhar, he said, what kind of yearning one should have? One should yearn for God as the cow with a yearning heart runs after its calf. Like this. Importance of yearning. We should develop that strong desire to see God. Make the number one priority in our lives. Other things will be done, can be taken care of. What is the one most important thing that I want to do before I leave this body? I want to see God. That should be number one priority in my list of things to do. And eventually it should be the only thing that we want to do. Other things will have been done or can be crossed out. Many people try, only a few succeed. So that is one thing. Third thing is how to intensify the yearning. Seeking holy company. Sri Ramakrishna has said many places in his teachings, seeking holy company will help us to intensify our yearning. Those are people who have seen God or are intensely trying to see God. In their company, our motivation also becomes stronger. They encourage us, motivate us to intensify our effort to see God. Holy company. Purity of thought, speech and action, as we studied in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 17 talks about three kinds of austerities. Chapter 17, verse 14, 15, 16. In chapter 17. 14 talks about bodily austerities, keeping the body, mind, etc. clean, worshipping God and the teachers and the wise people. Straightforwardness, these are one kind of austerities. Next is austerity of the speech. Anudvega karam vakyam. When we say something, it should not cause even the slightest disturbance in the listener's mind. You should not say things which embarrass other people, make them angry, make them upset, make them sad. You should not say such things. Satyam should be truth, absolutely. Priyam, it must be pleasant. Unpleasant things we should not say. Hitam, it must be beneficial. Useless things we should not say. These are all the austerities of speech, purity of speech, and purity of mind. 17:16. Manah prasadaha saumyatvam, maintaining an evenness, equanimity of mind in pain and pleasure, good and bad, success and failure, equanimity of mind. Hard to do, but we have to do that one. You have to practice equanimity. Malayav offers many opportunities every day to test our equanimity. Every opportunity should be taken, welcome, as a test to see how calm I can remain in spite of disturbances. Equanimity of the mind, samyatam, gentleness in our thoughts, maunam, silence of the mind, silence of thought, not of physical, verbal silence, but mind must be calm and pure, rid of unnecessary thoughts. Atmavinigraha, self-control of the mind. Mind wanders here and there, but we should again and again try to bring it back and make it focus its attention on the one thing that is most important in our life, that is God in our hearts. So this sort of purity. Truthfulness already has come. Constant recollection by repeating God's name or mantra or chanting hymns, singing devotional songs in any language and doing one's own duty as an offering, as Sri Krishna says in many places in the Gita, whatever you do, offer it to me. In our work, we should say, this is all my service, my offering to him. As offering, as service, as a servant, and as worship. Sri Krishna says, if you do all your work, duties, as worship of God, because we are always doing something, then we are always worshipping God. If you keep that attitude that everything I do is worship of God, then since I am always doing something, if nothing, I am sleeping. Shankara says sleeping is also an nidrasama adhisthiti. If we keep that attitude, then our whole life will become an unbroken stream of worship. And we are always in constant communion with the divine through our work. Don't have to change our duties. That one, doing all duty offering as worship, as an instrument, as a servant, practicing detachment from possessions. Nothing is mine, all are his. My house, my car, my property, my job, my work, everything is his. I can call them mine for day-to-day conversation purposes. As the maid servant says, my Rama, my Hari, my house, my garden, my kitchen. I can say that, but then I should know I don't own anything. Everything is his. I also belong to him. He is the true owner of all. That detachment from possessions, that detachment from work and its results by offering everything, doing everything as offering, as worship, and remaining equanimous in success and failure, as Sri Krishna says many times in the Gita. Detachment from our attachment to people and pets and things, by seeing them all as children of God, and they are all gifts, and I am only, in regard to children, I am only a babysitter, he is a true parent. In regard to wife and husband, I am the person who takes care of that person, serves that person, and he or she belongs to him, I also belong to him. We are all his children. This way, to some degree, we should try to develop detachment. All his, nothing mine. When baby is born, the custom is to take the baby to the temple as early as physically possible, offer it to God, say, this is your child, and I am taking it as a gift from you. I will take care of the baby, I'll be the babysitter, but the really child is yours. Offering. This is what Swami Adbhutananda's parents did when the baby was born. His name was Rakturam. They took the baby to the local Rama temple in the village. The baby was born, kept it at his Lord's feet, said, Ram Raktu, Rakturam. Oh Ram, please keep it. This is your baby. Then took it back, take care of this baby as a babysitter. Really, child is yours. Nothing is mine. That is detachment. But at the same time, we have to do our duty, because all these things have come to me. Spouse has come to me, family has come to me, children have come to me, job has come to me, money has come to me, everything has come to me only because I want it, only because I court it. And he has given. And something that is not intrinsic, that has come, was not there all the time, is also going to go away. Or they may all be intact and I may have to leave, or I'll be there and one of them, they will leave. When that separation comes, we should be able to say with great relief and gratitude that I did my part. Whatever he gave, I served very well. I took care of everything he gave to me. Spouse, house, children, property, money, whatever he gave, I took care of them. Now time has come, he is taking it back. Rama, you gave, Rama, you take it back. I have done my part. When separation comes from any of these things, we should be able to say with great joy and gratitude and relief that I have done my part. Now he is taking his things back. Or he is taking me back to him, which is even better. Things be there, I want to go to him. He is calling me back. That is detachment. So these are some other things. There are many other things. So we can try in our own humble ways, each one of us, to do these things with the ultimate goal of being able to tangibly see and feel his presence in me, in everybody else, in everything else, including inanimate objects, good and bad. That is the topic we studied. It gave me a lot of joy to study this topic. Though I'm not doing much, but just the fact of going through these things, saying some various sages and what scriptures say, was such a joyful, rewarding experience. Now we'll stop this topic here. And next time when we meet, which is next Sunday, I think, we'll start a new topic, quite related to this, actually a continuation of this, serving God in all. This topic was seeing God in all. From next week onwards, for a few more, it won't be as big as this one, serving God in all. How Swami Vivekananda, Swamiji told us, to do, serve every creature in the creation, because he alone is there. Whomever we serve, even if you put water to a drying tree, even if you give water to a thirsty dog, we are serving him. It all reaches him. How to do all actions as service, seeing his presence in all, that we'll be studying from next week onwards. Thank you very much. And I've already taken more time. Then I'll say the closing prayer. Then we'll go downstairs for refreshments and fellowship. Please come downstairs. Om sarve bhavantu sukhinah, sarve santu niramayah, sarve bhadrani pashyantu, ma kaschid dukkha bhag bhavet. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Om, may all be happy. May all be free from afflictions. May all realize what is noble and auspicious. May no one be subject to misery. Om, peace. May there be peace in our hearts. May there be peace and joy and harmony amongst all beings. And may there be peace everywhere in nature. Harihi Om Tat Sat. Sarvam Sri Rama Krishna Arpanamastu. Thank you all for coming and participating. It's a great joy, and have a great afternoon.